to Babylon. Dad a go down a Roman and throw a stone. Say the pit go fall and a Babylon fall.
Kids need your help. You're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing. On. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd. Today we broadcast from the Jojiage, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations.
My name is Maya Ibbotson, and this week Amy and I are finally reunited and are able to record together. So this week we're going to cover Queer History Month briefly by overviewing some lesser-known events and discussing Queer History Month celebration at McGill. We were lucky enough to get an interview with Miriam Ben-Slimane, who organizes Queer History Month at McGill. Amy talked to her about the celebration, what events are taking place this month, and more, and we'll air that after our headlines and a few tunes, so don't go anywhere because we'll be right back.
Thank you.
That was Baby Only You and I by Anemone. Now for our weekly headline roundup. Today, right after our show, from 6 to 8 p.m., McGill's Queer History Month is hosting an event. According to the McGill website, quote, "In the global context of anti-Black racism, Queer History Month wanted to specifically highlight Black, queer, and trans activists who were always and are still at the front line of the fight for LGBTQ+ rights. In this event, co-sponsored with BSN, you will have the chance to hear from several inspiring Black, queer, and trans activists. So you can register for that event with Eventbrite, and we will link those resources in our resource list during the feature.
Jason Marr, a Mi'kmaq fisherman, shared his experience in an interview yesterday where he said last week he was barricaded inside a lobster pound when about a mob of 200 people surrounded him and threatened to burn the building down. This building was notably the one in question on Friday when settler commercial fishers burnt down the Nova Scotia Mi'kmaq fishery and Mi'kmaq fans, as well as their lobster traps, and destroyed their equipment. Activists present during this hate crime reported that RCMP officers present did little to nothing to stop the harassment. As we've reported before, Amy's done a headline on it, the Mi'kmaq peoples are entitled to their waters and right to fish at this time through Section 35 of the Constitution, as well as the Supreme Court Marshall decision. The terrorizing of Mi'kmaq fishermen has been ongoing for decades, however, by white fishermen and the RCMP recently, this violence is seemingly increasing in attempts to sabotage fishing activities, even though the fishing industry brings in $1.1 billion annually in Nova Scotia, and Mi'kmaq fishing only accounts for 2% of that. You can immediately help by calling 902-426-2373 and emailing info@dfo-mpo.gc.ca. I'll include that in the resource list. But these are the Department of Fisheries and Oceans for the Government of Canada. And you can call them or email them and demand that they implement the Marshall decision into policy and stand by the Mi'kmaq peoples. I also just this morning saw a post that made me aware to perhaps not purchase Nova Scotia lobster, even though I wasn't purchasing lobster already because I'm on a student budget. But for those who love shellfish, you don't know where it's being sourced from, and your money could go indirectly to support domestic terrorism.
So another event for Queer History Month that you should look out for is on October 29th at 6 to 7:30 p.m. As stated on the McGill website, this event is about, quote, queerness and disability, hosted with Dawn Canada and the JBSCE Subcommittee on People with Disabilities. When it comes to the 2SLGBTQIA+ history and education, people at the intersection of queerness and disability are often forgotten and erased. As a part of Queer History Month 2020, join them for this panel on queerness and disability, co-sponsored with Dawn and, as mentioned before, as well as Disabled Women's Network Canada. The panel will be facilitated by Nellie Bassley, Manager of Youth Initiatives and International Relationships at Dawn. We will provide ASL interpretation and live captioning in English for this event," unquote. Like the other event I mentioned earlier, you can register for this event through Eventbrite, and of course, we will be linking the source at the end of our show.
The McGill's Black Alumni Association, in conjunction with the Subcommittee on Racialized and Ethnic Persons, is proud to announce the launch of McGill's Black Mentorship Program. The mentorship program will encourage valuable partnerships between Black students at both the undergraduate and graduate levels and Black alumni, faculty, and staff. The program aims to provide a rewarding experience for both mentors and mentees. Mentors will have the chance to share their knowledge and guidance with the next generation, and mentees will get to explore their academic, personal, and professional goals with accomplished McGillians. They will be having a panel discussion on October 22nd at 6 p.m. to launch the program, which will formally begin in January of 2021. The discussion will be moderated by Equity Education Advisor Shanice Yard and will probe community members to share their past experiences with mentorship and examine the program's goals and anticipated impact. There will be 4 other additional guest speakers at the panel, and registration for the event is now open on the McGill alumni website, but I'll include a link on our Twitter and our resource list.
So that concludes our weekly headline roundup. Next, we'll be playing some Mac DeMarco and then our feature on Queer History Month. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. That was The Stars Keep on Calling My Name by Mac DeMarco. Again, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Next up, we have our feature on Queer History Month, as well as an interview with Miriam Benslimane, which you'll hear next. Enjoy.
Welcome to our segment on Queer History Month. This segment is a little different. Usually we cover current events. However, this is an important month, and we have been lucky enough to get an interview with Miriam Benslimane, the Equity Education Advisor at McGill and founder of Queer History Month here at our university. Miriam will be explaining the history and origins of this month in just a moment. However, before you hear that interview, we wanted to cover the universal history of Queer History Month, and we want to issue a content warning. This segment includes mentions of homophobia, anti-Indigenous racism, colonialism, and ableism. Queer History Month celebrates and highlights the history and achievements of the 2SLGBTQIA+ communities, notably in the US, Ireland, Australia, the UK, Hungary, and Canada. So Queer History Month first began in 1994 when Rodney Wilson, a Missouri high school teacher, believed a month should be dedicated to the celebration and teaching of gay and lesbian history, and gathered other teachers and community leaders to spearhead this event. Wilson, who came out to his elementary class, received a large amount of worldwide backlash and resistance. Many, including the principal of his own school, believed that education should not include discussions of sexuality and lessons on the history of queer activism as well as culture. Wilson believed the month of October in North America was an appropriate month as it coincides with the dates of the Washington marches between 1979 and 1987, advocating for the 2SLGBTQIA+ rights. Furthermore, October also celebrates existing traditions in public schools, such as Coming Out Day, which is on October 11th. While it is celebrated broadly in the United States and the United Kingdom, it's first of its kind here at our own Canadian University, McGill. Granted, providing an overview of queer history is not a task that we could complete in 30 minutes or less, and we're not going to attempt it. However, we do want to cover briefly parts of queer culture and history that we feel are underrepresented and underreported, and that we ourselves wanted to do more research on because we weren't as informed as we should have been. One of the communities we wanted to discuss was the Two-Spirit community. For context, as stated by Jen Deerenwater, in their article, Birdache, Two-Spirit, and the White Anthropologist, defines Two-Spirit as, quote, an umbrella English language contemporary term that refers to non-binary gender identities that were present in some tribal nations pre-invasion. It was created at a gathering of queer Indigenous people in 1990 in Winnipeg, Canada. Two-Spirit was agreed upon as a term in order to give a decolonized context to Native gender identity and sexuality, while also replacing the white constructed term Birdache that translates to kept boy or male prostitute. Birdache was primarily been used by white anthropologists who misrepresented our communities through their own white settler privilege and hopes of furthering their careers off of our backs. Unquote. According to Deerenwater, Christianity and colonialism led to the historical erasure and oppression of two-spirited peoples. Indigenous genders expanded far beyond the colonized gender binary, and these gender identities were specific to their nations. Deerenwater, in their article, teaches us that, quote, gender and sexuality were not judged by Native people pre-colonialism. Many of those in these traditional roles were in positions of reverence. Our ability to contribute to our people was one of the utmost importance, and not how we identified or how we choose to love. In fact, having two-spirit persons in one's family was considered an honor. They acted as caretakers of children who lost their families, medicine people, warriors in battles, and tribal ambassadors in dealings with the American, spelt with three Ks, government, to name a few, unquote. Canadian history is one of colonialism and cultural genocide, in which Indigenous peoples and the numerous cultures and forms of indigeneity have been the primary target of. It's important to recognize the institutional role the Canadian government has played and continues to play with anti-Indigenous racism. It is also important to place an emphasis on the history of Two-Spirit peoples that encapsulates their autonomy and cultural power as a community and as individuals. The historical roles of Two-Spirited peoples is one of giftedness. Two-Spirited peoples have double vision as they hold both feminine and masculine eyes. This double vision provides insight, and they held positions of power such as chiefs, protectors, caregivers, medicine people, and knowledge keepers. Two-Spirited people were also caregivers of orphan children. According to Out Saskatoon, most Indigenous tribes recognized up to 6 genders prior to colonial invasion. Some communities would hold ceremonies for Two-Spirited peoples. I will now read out a story from Out Saskatoon about these ceremonies. Some communities also held ceremonies for the people who were Two-Spirit, such as the Mojave Aliha ceremony. A ceremony was prepared without the boy knowing. This was done as an initiation and a test. The boy was led into a circle with his family and various community members to witness the ceremony. It was seen as the boy's willingness to become Aliha, which is also another term for Two-Spirit. If the boy chose to remain in the circle. If the boy chose to remain inside the circle, the singer hidden behind the crowd would begin to sing. As soon as the song reached the boy, he would either choose to dance or he would choose not to dance. If the boy is unwilling to assume Aliha status, he would refuse to dance. But if his character, his spirit, is Aliha, the song goes right into his heart and he will dance with much intensity. After the ceremony, the boy is bathed and receives a woman's skirt. He is then led back to the dance ground, dressed in the skirt, and announces his new feminine name to the crowd. Now we're going to hear from Maya.
When a population such as the 2S LGBTQIA+ community is fighting for its rights, it is easy to forget that people with disabilities are very much part of the discussion. Poorer health and mental distress has often been attributed to the queer community, as the trauma they experience in their lifetime takes a toll on your body's stress response. Verbal and physical assault has been documented for years, with videos of trans black women like Eden the Doll being assaulted and beaten on the street this summer still surfacing on social media in calls for justice. It has been studied in health psychology that chronic stress wears on the body via the autonomic nervous system, causing ulcers, asthma, hypertension, and also as a precursor for fatal conditions such as heart disease. Besides the stress aspects that face the 2S LGBTQIA+ experience, the assaults they face in day-to-day life can make them feel more marginalized in a public or private setting. Besides health risks, 2S LGBTQIA+ peoples and disability intersection is a topic that often goes undiscussed. Disability is a term that encompasses a wide range of sensory, physical, cognitive, and psychological abilities and effects that many people both visibly and invisibly show. According to MAP, or the Movement Advancement Project, new research shows that LGBTQ+ peoples are more likely to have a disability than the general population. For example, in a survey of more than 26,000 transgender peoples, 39% reported having a disability. And 1 in 3 lesbians and 1 in 3 bisexual women report having a disability in a population-based survey in Washington. Still, the perspective of failing to include people with disabilities in the discussion of sexuality remains pervasive. By societal standards, the successful heterosexual is one who is non-disabled and as such, whose, quote, sexuality is not compromised by disability, unquote. This obviously applies to the queer community as well, if not in a more drastic way. According to Robert McRuer's Compulsory Able-Bodiedness, in order for a heterosexual subject to be deemed successful in their sexuality, said sexuality cannot be, quote, compromised, unquote, by disability. In turn, for a non-disabled subject to be deemed successful in their ability, said ability cannot be, quote, compromised, unquote, by queerness. Each identity is contingent on the other in the sense that ideal non-disabledness and ideal heterosexuality are determined by their relationship to one another. McRuer explains that if you are heterosexual, having a disability queers you. Conversely, if you are non-disabled, then being queer disables you. Another example of academic work that discusses this topic is Eli Clare's Exile and Pride, Disability, Queerness, and Liberation, which is a series of essays describing the author's experiences as a disabled genderqueer activist and writer. Similarly to McRuer's work, Exile and Pride focuses on how the disabled body is imagined by society as a sexless entity, rather than a body that belongs to an autonomous individual capable of sexual desire. Clare argues that we live in a world that is saturated by sex. Clare gives examples of sex plastered on billboards, in television, movies, magazines, and the news. And yet, Clare writes that, quote, disabled people find no trace of our sexualities in the world. We are genderless, asexual, undesirables, unquote. While there is, of course, value to non-sexual platonic romantic relationships in many circumstances, this value should not come at the expense of someone's dignity. These topics are vital to discuss in the face of statistics I mentioned earlier, as we must recognize disability in the sexual spectrum and how it may affect the queer community in particular. However, it is important we begin to approach the topic of disability with a greater understanding of how society and its many institutions, both social and physical ones, have framed disability. For example, Judith Butler met with Sudara Taylor to conduct a documentary titled Examined Life. In this doc, they challenge the way we consider disability and the idea of needing assistance. They discuss how help is something we all need, despite it being looked down upon. Where our boundaries lie as humans, when something becomes non-human, in between male and female, in between death and health, when do you still count as human? We need to be rethinking the human as a site of interdependency. Consider checking out that documentary and art that challenges the way society thinks of disability, such as American Able, developed by Jez Sach and Holly Norris. That was a photograph series that mimicked the aesthetic style of American Apparel ads with one distinct difference. Instead of featuring a normatively attractive person, these photographs feature Sach, a non-normatively embodied genderqueer person.
by mimicking the style but replacing a normatively attractive woman with a body of difference. The series raises questions about which kind of images are represented as beautiful and which are not, and which bodies are featured in ads and why.
Here at McGill, the Queer History Month was organized as an event for the first time in 2018 by the Social Equity and Divergent Education, or SEDE, office, in collaboration with seven additional community partners on campus. Through a series of screenings, panels, workshops, and community events, Equity at McGill says Queer History Month aims to, quote, raise awareness, advance education, and increase visibility of 2S LGBTQIA+ communities, unquote, by recognizing their history and contributions, building bridges, and bringing together McGill students, staff, faculty, and alumni, and Montreal community members. The opening ceremonies, called Return of the Rainbow, commenced on October 1st, and is known as McGill's homecoming event for current and past students, staff, and faculty who identify with 2S LGBTQIA+ communities, planned by the JBSCE Subcommittee for Queer People and the OPVA. After this, there are four main events, which include screenings, advocacy panels, and exhibitions. Today, in fact, there is a Black Queer and Trans Activism event with the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, IGSF, and BSN from 6 to 8 p.m., with Black Queer and Trans speakers discussing the fight for LGBTQ+ rights in contemporary times. I'm especially looking forward to that, and I will be tuning in. For our show today, we were lucky enough to have Miriam Benslimain, Equity Education Advisor at McGill, for an interview conducted by Amy. Miriam actually founded Queer History Month at McGill, which was the first of its kind at any Canadian university, as Amy mentioned earlier. We're so excited to have Miriam on the show to speak about activism for LGBTQIA communities, Queer History Month at McGill, what she has planned for it, and how it's going so far. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview.
So my first question is, would you mind telling us about your position and the role you play in Queer History Month at McGill?
Yes, so my name is Miriam Benslimain. I'm an Equity Education Advisor at McGill University, and I'm also the chair of the Planning Committee for Queer History Month.
And how did Queer History Month begin at McGill?
So it started really when I started at McGill University almost 3 years ago. I arrived and I noticed that there were events such as Black History Month, celebrating and highlighting Black history, and there was Indigenous Awareness Weeks to raise awareness around Indigenous education and issues, but there was no such events for the 2S LGBTQIA+ community. So I came up with the idea of planning Queer History Month at McGill. And Queer History Month is celebrated elsewhere in the world. It started in the U.S. in 1994. And actually, McGill was the first and still is the only institution in Canada celebrating Queer History Month, which is a source of pride, but also a bit of sadness, because I wish more institutions and universities and CEGEPs would celebrate it, but hopefully other institutions will pick it up and also celebrate it. But this is how it started in 2018, and this year it's the third edition already, completely online due to COVID-19.
And how far-reaching is the history that you covered during this month? How do you go about tackling that sort of big topic?
So it really, really depends on the people involved. It could cover any point of history, including the very present, which we tend to often forget when we talk about just the history. We don't take into account also the present realities. But yeah, we have covered like way back in the past, like on topics specifically around history, and maybe I would say in the last centuries or the last 50 years, also due to the LGBTQ+ rights movement. But we can go really anywhere. It really depends on the organizers and what they want to explore. also important to highlight all the history, because it is often forgotten, sometimes even erased from curriculum. Mm-hmm. So really the goal is to highlight and celebrate the histories and accomplishments and realizations of the 2S LGBTQIA plus community.
And speaking of, you know, histories that are erased or not incorporated, how do you ensure that Queer History Month incorporates the intersectionality of the queer community when creating events and when approaching, you know, topics?
That is a very, very great question. We have always tried to do that, to have really an intersectional lens when creating our events, and specifically passing the mic, if I may say, to even the most marginalized voices within the 2S LGBTQIA plus community. So thinking about, for example, intersex people, thinking about asexual people, thinking obviously about trans and non-binary folks, and specifically trans and non-binary people of color. And I feel this is even more important this year with the current global context of anti-Black racism that is happening, and all the violence, and also the anti-Indigenous racism. So that is something that we actually put at the center of our programming this year. We have a team that is called Love Stories of Solidarity and Resilience. And the idea is really to highlight the fact that that Black people, LGBTQ plus Black people, and specifically Black trans women, have always been at the forefront of the fight for LGBTQ plus rights, and they still are. And that is why we really, really wanted to highlight that with an important panel that is actually happening tonight around Black, queer, and trans activism, and really giving the mic to these activists who are doing so much in these difficult times. And we also try to always have an event around Indigenous Two-Spirit identity every year, because it is very important for us also to show the solidarity and act in solidarity with the Two-Spirit folks here in Canada.
And what are some events that you've done so far that you're proud of?
You mean in this year or any year?
In the past month, like events that have already passed.
Events that are already passed. I would say last year, we had the chance to have with us Sarah Ahmed, who's really a rock star of academia, if I can say. And that was incredible, very humbling experience to be able to meet and exchange with Dr. Ahmed. We also have in the past Chosen Family Day with Drag Queen Story Hour with the Drag Queen Barbada. And that was just an amazing space of connection where families and community could come together and be together. So that was a very, very moving space. I would say for this edition, and it was challenging because it was online, and we still wanted to do a Queer History Month, even in an online setting, but make sure to really adapt the event to still create those spaces of connections, of solidarity. I would say I really, really love the keynote, and this is maybe a little biased for me because I have a background in political science. So we had an amazing keynote speaker who's a trans feminine scholar from Sri Lanka, Shamindra Wirawardana, who spoke really about decolonial politics and feminine futures, and just to how to rethink our solidarities, our politics, our engagement in a decolonial way and decolonial and intersectional lens. So that was an amazing event to attend. And I'm super, super excited about tonight's event that will gather lots of amazing Black, queer, and trans activists And next week we also have, talking about intersectionality, we have an event around queerness and disability, which is also something I feel often erased or forgotten, not talked enough about. So really looking forward to that event.
And what are some courses that you're aware of that McGill offers that is about, you know, queerness and queer history?
So I don't know the exact titles, but obviously in this year again, IGSF at McGill is a very, very strong partner, and they offer many, many courses on queer culture, histories, politics. The Department also of History also offer some classes on queer history. So there are some classes that students can take, and actually it's great because some of the professors are involved in the planning of Queer History Month. So we benefit from their input, but they also take the opportunity of Queer History Month happening to incorporate even more content and highlight the history within their own classes. So that is something wonderful to see.
And lastly, outside of the context of Queer History Month, what are some groups on campus that you would recommend for queer students or students in general that are looking to learn more and become more involved in the queer community?
Yes, excellent question. Specifically in the times of COVID, where students might feel a bit isolated, because in the past you would come on campus and then might be easier to connect. I know that specifically the student groups are doing an amazing, amazing job. I would recommend, if you're an undergrad student, to check out Queer McGill or the Union for Gender Empowerment. And then if you are a grad student, there is the Queer Grad Club that is here, that runs events. You also have, if you're in law, you have Outlaw McGill. And if you're in engineering, there's a Queer Engineer that all these organizations are planning lots of events. And there's also this really, really great committee that is the Joint Board Senate, so the GBSC Subcommittee on Queer People. And I was the co-chair of that subcommittee. And that is basically just a space where students, staff, and faculty can gather, which is not the case for the student groups where it's really just for students. But the subcommittee on queer people, you have everyone coming and working on projects, advancing some policies. And it's just a wonderful space of connection. And lastly, another space specifically for trans and non-binary students, because I feel they're even more isolated within the LGBTQ plus communities. There's this gathering called T4T, as a tea, the drink for trans, non-binary, and questioning people. And again, it's a gathering for students, staff, and faculty. And we've been meeting not online because of COVID-19, but it's just a beautiful space where students are looking out for resources and spaces.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today and answering our questions.
No, thank you so much for having me on the show. And I hope people will come and join our event. We can be found with the social media handle 2SQHM.
That concludes our segment. Now for our resource list, which can be found on our social media, both Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Unfit to Print. So our first resource is an article I mentioned earlier on, titled Bird Egg, Two-Spirit, and the White Anthropologist by Jen Deerenwater. This article is just providing an overview of the treatment of two-spirited peoples in a colonial context, along with the history of two-spirited peoples and their cultural influence. Next, we have Give to Two-Spirited Peoples, Indigenous Women and Girls. So this is sort of an article. It's really a site that provides donation resources for Indigenous girls, women, and Two-Spirited Peoples. As stated on their website, they want to, quote, highlight or organizations that support Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples directly. We encourage you to be generous with your gifts and to urge your connections to learn the truth about these lands and how Two-Spirited peoples, Indigenous women, and girls are still disproportionately represented in injustices since first contact with colonizers." Unquote. Then we have a link to Two-Spirit events hosted on Ontario. So this is just literally a list of queer and Two-Spirited focused events that are located in certain cities in the province of Ontario. And you can click, you know, the city that you're in to specify searches. Then we just have events for McGill's Queer History Month. So considering it's the end of the month, there are only two events left, I'm pretty sure. But it's still a good place to check it out, register for the events, and see the events that have been hosted in the past. Then we have Two-Spirit Out Saskatoon. This is another resource that I mentioned earlier, and it's just an informative place to provide context and history on Two-Spirited peoples in Canada. So then we have the third Queer History Month held online, which is a review by Kate Ellis, the coordinating manager at the McGill Daily, and they just essentially reviewed how it went and the fact that it was online. Then we have, as we mentioned earlier, American Able by Holly Norris. So that is just a WordPress review that explains the project. I had trouble finding photos, but they do include some photos of the actual series. So check that out if you want to see what we were talking about earlier.
So in terms of the resources that I included, first we have the Canada Department of Fisheries and Oceans. In my headline, I provided both a number and an email, which will be in the resource list. And you can contact either the number or the email to demand the enactment of Marshall Decision in Mi'kmaq Fishing Territory and to stand in solidarity with Nova Scotian Indigenous fishing communities. Next, I have the McGill Black Alumni Association panel discussion. I include the sign-up link in the resource list. So again, this panel discussion is in anticipation of the launch of McGill's Black Mentorship Program. It's moderated by Equity Education Advisor Shanice Yard, and the discussion will probe community members to share their past experiences with mentorship and examine the program's goals and its anticipated impact. In the feature that I had, I discussed some articles or some academic resources by Robert McRoer and by Eli Clare. Unfortunately, both of these articles are on JSTOR and I accessed them by my McGill account, but if you just search up these names, I'm sure you can find a PDF online.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. Thanks for listening to our little segment, and a huge thank you to Miriam for taking the time to join us for an interview this week. Your expertise is much appreciated. We're going to play a quick song and then wrap up our show, so stay tuned. Thank you.
Welcome back. That was Eye to Eye by Body Wash. You're listening to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thanks for tuning in this week. Much appreciated, as always. And a huge thank you again to Miriam for joining us for this week's episode. Come back next week if you liked what you heard. Tune in. We're live at 5 for another show. We will link the resources mentioned in our show to our Twitter and our Instagram. Just search for Unfit to Print. We will see you all next week. Playing us out, we've got some Catronata.
Might get you by, alright. Lights fade. face has never left your side. You know, you're just a kind to let it all aside. You came to play, I got today. I'm on my way home. You count my ways, I can't delay. I'm not the one to wait on.
I've been waiting on the phone each time it goes. I've been waiting on the phone every time it goes. I've been waiting on the phone each time it goes. I've been waiting on the phone.
Truth is true. just a rule that you combat. You crack the whip, shape shift and trick the past again.
Is at a critical level in your area or a neighboring region. Getting together with family or friends is prohibited, and traveling to other regions is not recommended. More targeted restrictions have been put into place to limit the spread and prevent a lockdown. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Continue to wash your hands, keep a 2-meter distance, and wear a mask when physical distancing is impossible. We need to act now. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Hello, my name is Laura Halnick. I am an urban employee officer for Inuit Civic Center, which is employment center for Inuit community in Montreal. If you are Inuk and 18 years and older and currently job searching or interested in going back to school, you can join Iviktivik Employment Center. We have workshops with different topics to prepare the Inuit job seekers for job marketing. If you need help obtaining your identification cards, we can help you and pay for the costs. Participants earn $9 a day for attendance. This money will not affect your welfare checks if you are receiving income support. We provide bus tickets or weekly bus pass if you participate. Our team can also refer participants to other resources in order to obtain help for the basic needs, such as food banks, emergency shelters, income tax, etc. Due to COVID-19, all gatherings and big group activities we had before are temporarily on hold until further notice, such as elders' visits, volunteering visits, and cultural day. Mask washing your hands are mandatory at the entrance. Also, no food sharing. We care about your health. Invite your